You're listening to the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a special episode of Screen Heroes and Echo Station here on the Heroes Podcast Network. I am Derek, your regular host on Screen Heroes. Ray is out this week, but I have with me my longtime co-host, Ryan.
And best friend. Yeah.
And best friend, Ryan. Hi. And my lovely co-host. And
I am lovely.
And we have a special guest, host of Echo Station.
I'm your special irregular friend, Ian.
Hi, Ian.
Hi.
And Chris could not be with us.
No, she is sick.
So, unfortunately...
There's a sickness going around, apparently.
Yeah, and they didn't even come in contact with each other. That's how intense things are.
It's bad.
But we are doing a special episode to talk about Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, Episode 9, The End of a Saga. No news this week. We're going to jump right
into
it.
There was news, but we're not talking about it.
Literally nothing happened this week. Everybody knew that Star Wars was coming out, so we just sat around and waited.
Hello, but happy Cats holidays. Also came out.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Yeah, happy holidays.
Whatever holiday you believe in or
celebrate.
Is this the
episode before your holiday break?
We're not really doing a holiday break because we're doing this episode.
Yeah.
So we're good. But this episode is being dual released on the Screen Heroes and Echo Station feeds. So.
And HBO Max also.
And HBO Max. Peacock, actually, right. Is what.
We wanted to be next to The Office.
And this episode is actually going to be coming out on December 23rd, which is a Monday because it's a normal Echo Station day. And then, of course, we'll also be sharing it on Thursday, the normal Screen Heroes day. So you can come and listen to The Rise of Skywalker. We're just going to do your spoiler warning now. I don't want to have to worry about it. So if you haven't seen it and you care about spoilers, you might want to stop.
Goodbye.
Yeah. So not a lot to talk about from a box office perspective yet. Of course, we only have the Thursday nights in. Brought in 40 million Thursday night preview domestically, which actually puts it fifth all time. But it's behind both the Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. So they've kind of incrementally decreased since they came out, but it's still tracking to be somewhere between around 170 to 200 million opening weekend, which is lower for Star Wars, but is still pretty impressive for a movie. All right. How do we want to kick this one off, guys? It's tough. Like, where do you start? We could kind of go through the film because I do have some thoughts about the opening of the movie. If you guys want to start there,
we can go through segments. Sure. Let's do that.
Let's just watch see where the conversation
goes. Neither of you play Fortnite, right?
No, because I'm not 12.
Okay,
but
so,
I do know about what you're about to talk about.
Okay, so have you seen it? Do you know, like, have you read what it is?
I did not watch it or anything. I just read that it was basically the thing that was hinted at in the opening crawl was explained in a tie-in in Fortnite.
What was the thing in the crawl that's referring to?
Emperor Palpatine.
His return. Okay.
Yeah. If you obviously, at this point, if you're listening, you've probably seen the movie. In the crawl, it says, rumors have started that Emperor Palpatine has returned. And that's not something you do in the crawl. Like, that right away, I was like, that's something that is a major, huge plot point that should be in the movie, not
well,
in the crawl.
And it explains, the fact that it's in the crawl totally explains why the final trailer straight up just has him talking to Kylo in it. Which
wanted people to know that going into it.
Right, that itself wasn't a spoiler. Like, right. It's just a fact. So Ian, and for anybody else who doesn't know, so Fortnite had a special event with J.J. Abrams where it was a live event inside the game of Fortnite where they showed stuff, footage, clip, something that's unique and exclusive to that event.
So wasn't in the movie?
Was not in the movie. It was apparently what Ryan was saying here is it showed the return of Palpatine.
Or explained it. Something about it. Yeah. I don't know if it was actual footage, but it was definitely like, something, more information somehow.
It's weird. I can tell you just from my personal perspective, I don't like that's a thing that a game that has that you have to like be playing gets you exclusive access to content for a film.
That's a major plot point for one of the biggest films of all time.
It's a slippery slope. Weird. I don't like where that's headed because how long until like an entire show or film is just released inside of somebody's other media.
How much do you think Fortnite had to pay for that?
Fair question. Now, Ian, you're right. They did get some other Star Wars stuff. There's some skins mm-hmm. and different things that are in Fortnite as well.
But also, they've done Marvel tie-ins. So this right. is a Disney partnership that they've had for a while.
Mm-hmm. And you know, those aren't as timed. This was a straight up live one-time event in-game. And I just think that opens some doors that I'm not personally thrilled about. You know, Fortnite is free to play, right? So it's not like there's a payment entry there that you have to have a console,
right?
Right? To really,
it's free on PC, so you don't have to.
It's free on PC too.
Yeah.
So you have to have some type of device that it's compatible with, right? But there are other games that aren't. So if this, you know, is working in Fortnite, how long until something with a paywall starts right. doing something like that?
And that's not great, but I don't think we should spend too much time talking about
it. Sorry, let's move on. So the opening starts very, very quickly.
It's
right.
very like just boom.
Right.
There
the Falcon is going very, very fast. They're trying to pick up some information really quick. And then they do these light skips.
Which has never been explained in any Star Wars movie ever.
No, it is something out of Star Trek, though.
Right, but this is not Star Trek, so it's not been in any Star Wars movie.
No, but people like to compare light speed and warp drive, so I was just continuing that. But how did you guys feel about the light skips?
I wasn't mad at it. I mean, JJ said, you know, in the beginning that there's going to be some stuff in this movie that's going to be controversial to some Star Wars fans, whether it be Force powers or new characters, ships, you know, abilities, whatever it may be. So going into it, I've had an open mind of what to expect. So seeing that, I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting and cool. Didn't really bug me anything. It didn't, you know.
It was fine, I guess. I mean, it didn't really stand out as a bad thing or a good thing. It was just kind of a weird choice to start the movie off. As a whole, like, the first 20 minutes of the movie are spent retconning everything that happened in The Last Jedi. So, you know, that was a little weird for me, but...
Okay. Yeah. I thought it was a very quick opening. Usually the Star Wars films don't open that like.
Well, the entire
intense.
Movie is that way. That's the thing. That's fair. Is like, it seems like it was edited by somebody that was high on cocaine the whole time because
it was a very
there was something I complained at the end of the movie about to my girlfriend that went with me was that it there was no breathing room, right? Which is a weird complaint for a movie, but you don't realize that you need to have character building moments in space, you know, space to just kind of let things happen and air out. And this movie had almost none of that, and I felt it at the end. I was almost, I don't want to say I was exhausted, but I was definitely worn out at the end of the movie.
Yeah, it's on the shorter side, like compared to like The Last Jedi, for example, and I feel like it does more.
It felt longer to me than The Last Jedi.
Really? Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, it didn't for me. I think maybe it's just because of my feelings towards The Last Jedi. I just wanted that movie to end, and it felt like it was never going to, but, this one felt like it moved. It was just moving very quickly all the time.
For the right amount off the of bat, stuff too. They had in this movie, they could have added maybe like 15, 20 more minutes of just something.
I mean, unless it was like space, like the airing out type space. Of scenario. They already tried to do so much in this movie. You know, I would, if they added 15 or 20 minutes, it's fine as long as those are moments that like are really important.
That's what, yeah.
Not
I don't want just like
frantic,
random,
you know, light
like
speed
random
jumps.
Canto bite scenes. I want, you know, something worthwhile.
Slowing it down would have been nice. You know, maybe have some more shots of cuts to ships flying or something mm-hmm. like they did in the older films, just to slow it down a little bit. But I guess we can move on from that though. So I guess what happened next chronologically in the film?
Kylo grabs the Sith Finder.
So is that a thing? Yeah, is that a thing in Star Wars lore?
No. So yes,
at least
and
not
no.
in the stuff I've seen. Maybe it is in the animated series where
it's
Ian's better at it.
So they have Sith holocrons, and
right.
And
this is not a holocron.
Though. No, it was shaped like a holocron though. And when I was looking at it, I'm like, "That's a holocron." They're like, "No, it's not." I'm like, "It's a holocron." So ish. Sith holocrons, you can hide maps. You can hide, you know, a bunch of stuff, whatever you really want in a holocron. So,
but holocrons are canon, so why wouldn't they have just called it a holocron if that's what it was?
Because they also renamed the Sith homeworld twice.
One
now.
Of the Sith homeworlds, yeah.
Twice now.
One of them, right.
They just keep adding Sith homeworlds.
Yes. So I guess the Sith like to shop around for homes.
Each one has a different home.
Yeah.
Right. It's their summer home
and different climates, yeah.
Right.
Like a skiing resort.
Their summer home, winter home, yeah, exactly.
So I mean, he's just going like just slaughtering all these, I guess, keepers of the Sith wayfinder thing. I don't know what you want to call it.
Yeah, he was just kind of killing off random people. No, yeah,
he was just slicing them down and mowing them down.
It was cool. I mean, yeah. One thing about this movie was all the action scenes were pretty well done. Mm-hmm. I didn't have an issue with really any of them. And, you know, there was the lightsaber combat was well executed, which it isn't always, you know.
True.
And that whole scene was, I mean, as frantic as the movie was, it was cool. It was, mm-hmm. it was a cool scene to watch. And seeing him stand above all those, you know, corpses that he had just killed was neat. Although I still find Adam Driver really hard to believe as a badass of any kind, and so that's
fair.
I mean, but it's been that way since episode 7. So, you
know. Yeah, I will say, going kind of down the thread of the visuals, I do think that everything else aside, the visuals were really solid across the board.
The cinematography, just in general,
yeah. I really think they like technically did a good job with that.
And the effects aspect of the film were really good too. Mm-hmm. I never really saw. There wasn't a moment where I was like, "That's not so good looking." But.
There was one moment on the desert, on the speeder that they're on in the desert, where they do a close up of Rey, and the background looked kind of funky. Mm-hmm. But that, I don't know why it did. It was that one shot.
I mean, they filmed an actual desert, a lot of that, so
the Wadi Rum desert. Yeah.
So, right. I mean, and maybe that was a different, like,
I wonder if it was maybe the heat from maybe, like, the sand causing it to like warp a little bit or something.
That's why, like, I don't want to say like it was bad green screen, because it didn't look like that. It just looked off, but it was that one shot, and then the rest of the movie I thought looked really clean.
I know what shot you're talking about. I'm seeing it tomorrow, so I'm gonna look out for this tomorrow when I see it. I also like to call that planet where Star Wars goes to Burning Man. Because
that's not bad.
I'm like, oh, this is, and they're all like, you know, jive and everything.
Now
this
it makes fun. Sense why Lando is there, actually. Yeah, right. It's all coming together now. Well, okay, so let's not gloss over Palpatine, though. So Palpatine is
Papa
back.
Palpatine.
Papa Palpatine. Grandpa Palp.
Palpy.
So a couple of things with this. I discovered today, I didn't know this, that in actual canon comic books that Disney calls canon,
I know exactly what you're gonna bring up.
It was confirmed that Palpatine created Anakin. It was Anakin's father. I didn't know that was canon after the acquisition and stuff. I didn't really know if that was a thing.
He influenced the midichlorians in Shmi's womb. And
here's the
thing. I like to think of it as he used the Force to do it. I don't like thinking about midichlorians.
Well,
right. But it gets a little more complicated, because from a DNA perspective...
Okay, we're not going to get into this.
I want to make it clear that Anakin is Palpatine's son. I think that's important.
Except there was no DNA exchanged. Like, we don't know how the Force works. We don't know. We know that he used the Force to create his son. That doesn't mean that he's a biological son.
But
you're assuming a lot of things with that.
Well, here what I'm assuming is the science behind a spontaneous pregnancy, which creates a genetic clone of the mother.
Right, but we don't know how the Force works, so who knows? I think trying to discuss DNA and from a magical force that can create a baby inside of a womb is not really that worth arguing about.
I think it's important because we have more incest in Star Wars in this movie, and I just think it's weird.
Maybe. I mean, we don't know if it's a biological kid of Palpatine for any reason. I mean,
I want to know who slept with Palpatine.
Who clapped them cheeks?
Who
for Rey's dad?
Who, like, just, you know, sat on that shrivelly Sith dick.
Who
and
executed Order 69?
To be fair, we don't...
And with testicle face, too, because this was... He would have been testicle face.
Now, hang on. We don't know that...
Oh, my God, that was funny.
We don't know that Rey's dad wasn't created the same way Anakin was created.
It's true,
but...
But we do... Derek and I already had this discussion. That's why I was going to end it with him, because I know where it's going to go, and he's not going to relent, no matter how much I say about it. But
right, talk to me about it.
The reason why I don't think it happened that way, and that he did clap them cheeks, was because he specified, like, Rey, you're my granddaughter. Like, he's going after Rey.
Right.
Kylo... He couldn't give two shits about, really, other than to bring Rey to him.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's where I feel like the disconnect is.
Physical penetration happened.
Exactly.
Well, and my thought process was just that.
Wrong.
Because Anakin and Luke, both failed Palpatine, he's like, I'm not going to fuck with the Skywalkers again. I'll just go the other way.
I'm going to fuck someone else.
I mean, I feel like that's a logical step for a character who's fairly intelligent.
We're both assuming things, but, and, you know, it's, we don't know.
I mean, I can also see someone sleeping with him because you watch, no.
Who doesn't love a good testicle face?
Did you watch Rebels?
I have watched some of Rebels.
So in Rebels, in the series finale, he presents.
Is there a sex scene in Rebels?
I hope so.
He presents himself as the Chancellor, as like normal face Palpatine. He can control people's.
It's probably like, just like force persuasion in a way.
It is. So kind of like, you know, he could have very well done that to someone and, you know,
during sex, like just don't get too close or you start to see the testicle wrinkles on there. How many times do you think we'll say testicle?
Well, that makes it even worse then. I know. Cause there's other implications for that that are not good.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he's back and he's attached to that machine thing that I guess is kind of keeping him alive.
His iron lung.
Right.
we also should mention that he full out just admitted, you know, hey, I made Snoke. Hey, I'm.
Yeah, that was a weird. Another voice retcon, of Vader's. Right.
There was like a jar of Snokes. Did you see the jar?
Three of them. They're all clones of him or whatever. Supposedly,
there's another room with the clones of Ripley. I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He takes piece. He said, "I took a piece of myself when I created Snoke or however he wanted it."
Which is the J.J. Abrams weird retcon for the whole thing.
So, because when people are like, "Oh, Snoke's the Emperor." They weren't far off, technically, I
guess.
What
piece did he give to make the Snokes?
Remember he was missing, like, the tip of his finger, so he just, like...
Oh, is that it? Okay. Wormtail had to do so much more for Voldemort, so...
Just full-on, just hands gone. So, it made sense that he created Snoke to puppeteer Ben to make him go to the dark side and, you know, all this stuff. It's, you know, the Sith like to prolong things and do a lot. They're very extra people.
Yeah, so, like building a whole fleet of Death Star destroyers, whatever, that can blow up a planet on it with a single Star Destroyer. Spend your whole like 150 years or however old you are doing that.
So speaking of that, I do want to say I'm very happy that it wasn't another spherical weapon that they had to fly into and blow up.
This was better for you?
I didn't say it was better. I said it was different.
It made sense why they did it, because... So you have Starkiller Base, which, fun fact, is actually the planet Ilum from Clone Wars that they blew up, but anyway.
Not just from Clone Wars, but yeah.
Yes. And so in Last Jedi, they have the battering ram cam, whatever it's called, and they ask what that is, and they say miniaturized Death Star tech. So, like, with cell phones, they were big, and now they're, like, really small.
But
so
miniaturized Death Star tech doesn't mean that you can still blow up a planet with it.
No, but they have the technology to, you know...
You know what I mean? Like... I don't buy that from the time. How long was it from Return of the Jedi to Rise of Skywalker?
Well, and it's 40 years from the
3 years.
I thought it was
30 some odd years.
You're going to tell me in 30 years they made the tech so advanced that they could go from a planet size.
Well, it does take longer. It's a longer concentrated beam.
So now but accepting it. Mr. DNA is accepting of this now.
I'm not accepting that at all. But it's just a weapon that's been used literally the entire time. No, I just like that part bothered me less than how they were blowing up the Star Destroyers, which didn't work until all the ships showed up, but still like a Y-Wing did it by itself. So like they didn't take down any before that then. Like that's really where my problem comes into is consistency within the story itself.
What didn't they say the shields were up or something? Or they had shields until they reached atmosphere or something?
No, there weren't shields.
There weren't shields.
Yeah. But they were saying that they needed bigger ships to blow up those guns. So they were stalling while they were waiting for Lando. Show up, the first ship that blows up a Star Destroyer is a Y-Wing, which is great. I love the Y-Wing, but they already had Y-Wings. So...
I think we're skipping around a lot.
We are.
I know that
we're going toward the end now.
That Ian has there's an early scene, and I know Ian probably has a lot of feelings on it. The training scene with Rey and Leia.
First off, I love just seeing Rey like calling out to everyone, and she's like, "Well, no one's answering, so peace. I'm just gonna drop these rocks and."
That was a cool seeing her float with all those rocks.
Yes,
cool.
I like that. That was very cool. I love that they made Leia her. New master. She addresses her as master, and
I think that's a little weird.
Well,
I think she was she ever a master? Like
in the EU?
Yes. We know that's not canon.
So the problem comes in at the end of the movie when Luke tells her that after that she put down her saber and she never picked it up again. So that implies that for Ben's entire life she wasn't using any Jedi abilities or Jedi training at all.
Right.
But she was still trained to be a Jedi after she had been.
No, because she put down her saber.
Because he said that once Ben turned to the dark side, she
didn't start training again. She was took over.
She
as
stopped
general.
Training.
No, she stopped training earlier.
Yeah, because
there's the training scene with young Leia.
Right.
Right. And he said that after that, she had a vision about what would happen to Ben.
I thought he said
so she
that,
put her okay. She put down the saber and never touched it again.
I thought he said that after he turned, she dropped it.
So okay, so that right. does imply that she was not using her abilities to any significant extent during that time, which is also why I assumed it was going to be Force Ghost Luke that was training Rey.
Right.
And I'm not saying that Leia couldn't do it, but the movie kind of explains why she wouldn't have done
and
it
also,
in its own film.
Episode 8 was literally called The Last Jedi. Pretty sure that Leia was still alive during that whole thing, so I'm not quite sure, you know what I mean? That implies that she wasn't even a Jedi.
Well, no, it I think the...
Unless it's the plural of Jedi, which is whatever.
Well, that's not where I was going to go with okay. that, but that's an interesting point, too. I actually thought it meant Leia, because Luke dies in The Last Jedi. Rey is not a Jedi yet. She's just Force-sensitive. Like, she's not a trained Jedi. She just can use the Force.
But neither is Leia, really. She's barely trained, as far as we can see in this
movie. But I think that was the initial implication, was that it was Leia. Now, that's not where it went, because Carrie Fisher died. The plan wasn't for that. Right? Like, they were well underway.
No, the plan for 9 was to be Carrie's movie. This was going to be, like, her as a Jedi.
So I think that's probably where that complication comes in.
Okay.
But yes, no, I love that scene. It was very sweet.
It was just a cool scene all around.
It was. I actually liked the way they used Carrie's scenes because, you know, JJ said they had about 8 to 10 minutes of unused footage from The Force Awakens. And there were two scenes in there from, like, deleted scenes that I saw that they repurposed. But a lot of those scenes that she was in, they were brand new scenes to everyone, and that was kind of surprising, and it felt like, you know, she was actually there, and it was very nice.
It looked pretty good.
Yeah.
It's not an easy thing to superimpose a character in other scenes. Like, we've seen it done very poorly for a long time.
Yeah.
And that's definitely the best I've ever seen it done.
Yeah, I didn't really even pick up on the scenes where it was superimposed, at least, like...
I think it was all of them. Other than some close-ups, like, because those weren't any...
No way.
I really think that she was put on a different background.
Everything that they shot, they had to reshoot. So, like, Rey talking to Leia in Rey's new, you know, white outfit, they reshot and relit every single thing how it originally was. They just changed everything.
The only one that really stood out to me as not good was the young Leia. That did not look good to me.
It looked off. They both looked off. Yes. Luke looked off, too.
They both did not. Neither of them look... Like, if you just showed me a picture of those two from that scene, I wouldn't tell you that that's Luke and Leia. There would have been no way I would have guessed that.
It's a little weird, because I feel like it's the de-aging that doesn't seem to work in Star Wars, but everything else seems to work,
yeah.
You know? Because, yeah, the rest of the time, I felt like they handled bringing her into the movie just technically just really, really solid. Did. I mean, it is obvious that she's not saying much on purpose, like for a very specific reason, right. But I do appreciate the lengths that they went to give her story an actual coherent end and not really have her die off screen, because that would have been the alternative.
Yes.
No, but then when she did die, they left the body during the movie, it was like, why is this body sitting out on this bed for like days, weeks, like
hours? And
it was so it was that just, they could get the scene of it like going
no
it was just hours.
Yeah, it was hours. It was
I mean in the time well, of the movie it seemed like it a lot longer than
the whole
that.
Movie takes place in about 16 hours.
Yeah,
right. So I'm just saying that it seemed like more of that to me. Like even my girlfriend, when I talked to her, she was like, yeah, it seemed like they just kind of left the body there the whole time just to get this one scene where the thing drops, and that was cool, so I get it, but
well, yeah. They cover her, which is pretty
right.
Normal,
that's what I'm saying. They get the whole scene where the sheet drops and she like joins the Force.
Well, they're all about to die. I don't think they're gonna like dig a grave.
Yeah, they don't really have time for that.
Like that part, I didn't. That part
it was just
fine,
a little weird. But it doesn't really bother me that much. But
fair enough. I did like the connection between her and Ben. Like somehow they were keeping each other alive.
That's what I kind of felt too.
Which was kind of interesting.
Like when she, you know, did you know sacrifice herself to redeem him. That she was kind of watching over him until he was ready to go, and then they both went at the same time.
I wonder if she actually brought some of herself into him to help keep him on the light side long enough to stop Palpatine.
We can see the transference of Force in this, so I wouldn't put it past that.
So, getting to that...
Which part?
the transference of Force, and just how the Force is handled at all at this point. In the original movies and even in the prequels, the Force was more like a tool that you used, and it was not...
There's your Force push, Force pull.
Right. Now it's obstacles. Like literal superpowers. Everything that you do is literal superpowers, and it's way crazier than it was in the, and I don't love how far it was fine. Right. Like I'm not going to bitch like crazy about it, but it does seem like it's just gone away from where it was in the spirit of the first few movies. And that kind of bothers me. Right. They use that healing thing like 20 times and we've never seen that before.
Well, so it's in The Mandalorian twice.
I know. And it was been in the games and it's been in a lot of things. It's canon, but
I don't like the healing. But I like it more. I don't dislike it as much as I dislike the ability to grab an object, like the necklace. Because when I was seeing how those scenes were shot, and I was thinking back to The Last Jedi and stuff like that, I thought that was just a visual way to show the audience what was going on in their heads, right? Because how else do you do that? And I thought it was a brilliant, cool way to show them sharing each other's head spaces, right? And it was great until he gets the necklace. And they use it, and it's like a MacGuffin to use it later so he can get the lightsaber at the end when he needs it. Mm-hmm. And that, I don't like that. That doesn't work for me, because if he can do that, why can't he?
That's what I mean when I'm talking about these things have turned into superpowers, because that's an insane, like, Luke projecting himself was pretty crazy, but what that scene is even crazier, like, the amount of power that would take. And I don't know.
It's just what's the limit? At what point can you just teleport yourself somewhere else and then teleport a ship somewhere else? And then, like, I just feel like it just keeps ratcheting up with each film until it just...
I mean, even her, she was able to pull, almost pull a ship that was taking off almost back down to a planet.
Well, right? I didn't really have a problem with that.
When has that been done?
I feel like...
We're not talking like Thanos with the Infinity Gauntlet pulling stuff out of space. We're talking a single Jedi.
No, you're right. I mean, I know
I've seen it before.
I feel like the...
In the video game, Starkiller could pull Star Destroyers out of space.
In the Clone Wars, something happened in the Clone Wars, something similar like that.
But I'm guessing it was somebody that was trained a lot more than Rey has been trained. And you can't put Leia training Rey on the same level as, like, Yoda training Luke.
No.
Because Yoda is a Jedi master.
I didn't take it as a training thing. I took that as sheer instinct. Like, because she's always been shown to have incredible force abilities.
So was Luke.
But she's supposed to be even stronger. Like, she's supposed to be, like, Anakin level or above.
Right, but Luke couldn't even pull an X-Wing out of the bog.
Right, but he's also not... I think the point that scene was trying to show is how close she is to the dark side, because that's why she uses the lightning effect.
I get what that is, but I'm just saying her anger. Sheer power levels. Like,
I think that your emotion also stands in the way of
right,
your power
but wasn't
level.
Luke trying to get to his friends when he was trying to pull the X-Wing out of the bog so that he could fly off and go rescue his friends who are dying on Cloud City because of a vision?
But what we've seen of that's Luke instinct. In live action isn't really that impressive, actually.
No, he's done so
it's because
many way cooler things in the comics and
that's
stuff.
What I'm saying. They ratcheted it up like 100 times.
No, they
and
did.
It's way beyond that. And I like the spirit of that, where you had to train to be able to do stuff that was pretty cool, but not like Superman-level stuff.
They definitely have kind of played fast and loose with the Force, right? Starting it with the way you're talking about and then moving on to the midichlorians, and then it's a thing you're born with and then moving it back to something that everybody can have. And then taking that back. And now you've got it again. And Finn maybe is Force sensitive, mm-hmm. I guess, now too. Or it's his connection with Rey. I don't know which. Or both. I don't know. But we'll never know.
It's like
that's the end
super
of it.
Ambiguous. Like Chirrut from... was it Rogue One?
Rogue One, yeah.
Yeah, where he was, like, implied to be Force-sensitive, but we don't really know if he was Force-sensitive. You know, that whole thing.
It's definitely not consistent, and I think it makes me appreciate the concept of the midichlorians, because at least George Lucas was trying to come up with a system that could be tracked,
right.
That could make
a
sense.
A number count.
Right?
Like when you're talking mutants in X-Men, you know, you have these levels of mutants.
The Omegas and the...
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, it didn't work. I get that it didn't work. I agree it didn't work, but I appreciate that that's what he was trying to do, because without that, this is now we're here, where it's kind of all over the place.
Yeah. I mean, in the originals, it was like, Jedi were this kind of mythical thing that they could do really cool stuff with the Force, right? And so you could see them lift an X-Wing out of a bog or something like that. And that's really cool.
Yeah.
But then they just ratcheted it up so many times for this trilogy. Like, I was even okay with Kylo stopping a bolt from a blaster in midair and just holding it there while concentrating on other things. Even that was okay. But they just... This movie just made it crazy.
Well,
it's literal Supermen walking around.
Even when you get to the Palpatine level, the electricity
that was so
he's
dumb.
Using, I mean, he's taking out a literal massive fleet of varying size ships, and I don't even know how a
but
person,
not his ships, not, just right. the just the other ships.
So he'd have to know and concentrate and be able to pick each one of those, and I don't even know that that makes sense. But then at the end, when Rey stops him, that explosion of force power killed like 30,000 people in that auditorium. Like, just poof, just gone. Whatever they were. I assume.
But Rey was okay.
I don't know what they were. I don't know if they were just like.
Well, she died.
Well.
We'll get to that later.
Yeah. I don't know what exactly they were, because they were all, you couldn't see a single
face. I
kind of
took them as spirits, almost, like, they weren't like,
oh, were
actual,
they the dead?
They were like apparitions yeah. in this, like, unholy place for the Sith.
Okay. So that changes, and then that makes what I said.
That's what I took it as. That's why they didn't show their face. They're basically just black figures.
I kind of saw that as well. Like, they're the shadows. They're like mm-hmm. the, yeah.
So they're all the dead Sith?
Maybe. Something along those lines.
Or
yeah.
dead followers of the Sith yeah. or something. Yeah.
Okay. I hadn't considered that. That's interesting.
They're just trapped spirits in that.
Which makes it easier
place.
To buy.
Totally does. Yeah. Totally does. Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Can we talk about how, I mean, this is a much larger theme, but like this movie being the way it did and bringing Palpatine back. Basically invalidated like everything that Anakin and Darth Vader was. He was the one that was supposed to bring balance to the Force. He was the one the prophecy talked about. But him not killing the Emperor means that he did not accomplish that, and completely like gets rid of that whole.
Maybe the prophecy was about Rey.
Well,
maybe, but like,
so I think I have an answer to that though. The balance was brought by everything that happens in episode 3 and the Clone Wars, because you go from having hundreds of Jedi or even a few thousand Jedi and two Sith to really only having like two and two, right? Like that's the balance. And that's kind of what we're left with at the end here is you just have Rey. There's nobody else.
That's not balance.
Well, I think it's as close to balance as you get is someone she's more in the middle than anybody else ever has been. Because she's so close to the dark side. Like, she's used dark side abilities. She's almost crossed that threshold.
So did Luke.
When did Luke do that?
He didn't actually use dark side abilities, but he came very close.
He used the Force Choke on one
yeah,
of his Gamorrean
guards.
Yeah,
that's true. He did use the Force Choke the one time.
Oh, yeah, I forgot
and
about
he, like,
that.
He, like, straight up just, like, threatened Jabba's, like, no, fuck you. I'm going to kill you.
Well, a threat's different than actually going
no,
through
with it.
No, that's
not the
Jedi
way.
People bluffing is different than actually.
Was he bluffing?
Oh, look at Mace Windu. He was a pretty, like, he was going to just, like, chop Palpatine's head off.
That's
like,
just
you know,
Samuel Jackson with a lightsaber.
Well, that's fair. All right, well, hang on. So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue talking about the rise of Skywalker.
Recently on the Heroes Podcast Network, Echo Station.
Well, what's the main what's the main planet that Endor, the forest moon of Endor? It's a moon, so it's there's a major planet, obviously, that it
is. The forest moon of Endor, is Endor the actual planet then?
See, isn't that confusing?
Yes.
Is it the forest moon of the planet Endor, or is it the forest moon called Endor?
Kaiju Curry House.
It got to the point where he started climbing the Empire State Building, and my mom is like, he's not gonna die, is he?
Oh no.
My mom doesn't know shit about these films, but anyways, it was just like, Mom, this doesn't end well for Kong. And she's just like, I can't watch the rest of this. Turn it off. I'm like, you can't get to this point in Peter Jackson's King Kong 2 hours and like whatever many minutes later and not watch the end.
Screen Heroes.
The nipples just were confusing to me because they just make no sense.
That is our clip, by the way.
But I mean, male nipples are kind of confusing anyway. So
right? Like, well, they serve zero purpose.
Do you think that was the point he was trying to make?
It's a much deeper message. Yes.
Is Batman and Robin a heavily
an allegory,
social allegory?
Yeah.
Subscribe today at heroespodcast.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Spreaker, Podcast Addict, and more.
Okay, so we're back. The balance thing is a difficult question, right? Because even in the when she's hearing all the voices and stuff, Anakin is in there saying that bring balance to the Force like I did.
Did you? Because you didn't actually kill Palpatine.
Well,
so.
Even if he did, let's pretend for a moment that he did. Would you want to do it that way? Because he was a bad guy for most of his life.
Yeah.
Like, don't do it that way. Don't do what he did.
Yeah. Well, I don't think he said, do it my way, exactly. But he did say, yeah. Yeah, it was a weird line.
Please take my saber, who I murdered 30 children with, by the way.
Also, that's another problem. That saber was broken at the end of Last Jedi.
Correct.
And now it's just magically fixed with no exposition to explain it. Other than there's a clamp on the saber now.
So, my headcanon is, I think they cut this scene out.
I love that you have headcanon, but I'm talking, we're reviewing the movie. We're not talking about headcanon.
I think that what they probably cut this scene out. There's a scene in The Force Awakens in the teaser trailer where you see Maz hand Luke's lightsaber to Leia. I'm kind of betting that Maz fixed it.
That's great, but it wasn't in the movie. No, so, that's, you know, you're just assume that somewhere in there, Rey learned how to fix a lightsaber, even though before you're a Jedi, or when you're a Jedi, you're supposed to build your own lightsaber, but now she can just magically, like, repair somebody else's lightsaber.
I mean,
you have a bunch of Jedi texts and stuff. I'm sure there's, like, a how-to manual on how to repair a lightsaber.
Repairing that, that doesn't really seem
to bother
me. No, but
it's just a weird thing to leave out, because they made it a point to show the broken lightsaber at the end of the other movie, and now it's just, like, perfectly fine, right at the beginning of this movie, with nothing in between.
I mean, well, there's several years in between.
But nothing explained. We're just
For me, that's just as small as, like, the dish on the Falcon being knocked off in Return of the Jedi, and now they have the new dish in The Force Awakens. Like, they fixed it.
For somebody that likes props, that's a problem for me. I need to know that how it got fixed, what the logic behind it was, who fixed it.
Well, I feel like
at least there was a clamp on it, right? Like, it showed that there was some effort made to repair it. It wasn't just, like, brand new again.
No.
I did like how her new saber at the end of the film has a
don't get me started. I
has
love
a totally
thing.
Different switch. Like, that's actually really cool.
I love that it's made from pieces of her staff. Yeah. Yes, but was wonderful. It a yellow blade or was it an orange blade? It's really hard to tell in that light.
It looked more like a golden yellow to me.
I was thinking yellow too, but
so as the colorblind guy in the room, I was going to ask you guys because it looked different and I couldn't really figure it out.
It was either yellow or orange. It's hard to tell because there's a lot of light.
I don't think in the desert and stuff.
It looked way more golden yellow to me than orange.
I really like that saber. I was a little disappointed it wasn't more like a staff because that's what she's used to. Like, that's what she's good at.
I was hoping that, it would be more of a staff. But
it was still really cool.
And I like that it is like a dark colored saber. You don't see a lot of the blackish. Dark hilts. But
it was
so
very
I loved
fitting
that.
For her.
So what'd you guys think of, I have it in my notes, some of the new characters like Zori and Janna and Grand Vice
Who's
Admiral.
Janna?
She was the woman with the horse thing.
Yeah.
The other stormtrooper.
Gotcha.
I like Zori. So that was really cool. I really like her. And I can't believe I'm doing this.
Kerry Russell?
Thank you. I can't say Kerry Washington. I knew that was wrong.
That's not it.
Kerry Russell. I really like Kerry Russell, and so I was really excited when she was going to be in this. I thought that character was super cool.
You love the show Felicity on the CW? That's the only thing she's been in, I think.
Only thing ever.
I don't know. I've never heard of her being in.
Anyway, I was excited to have her in this. I wish we could have gotten a little bit more.
Her character was cool, but like they only ever showed her eyes. This is like another Mandalorian situation where they can't take their helmet off. Like,
she reminded me a lot of the Daft Bounty Punk. Hunter from episode two, Zam Wessel, who had the veil and could only like see her eyes through most of the film. So that's who she kind of reminded me of, and so I'm like, it's cool.
Her costume was cool, and like she
cool was design.
An interesting character, but she wasn't really given much to do, and so
she was just there for exposition and like convenient plot point.
But I like the idea of more stormtroopers defecting. I think that first off makes a lot of sense because there's millions of stormtroopers, so the idea that just one would see a problem was never realistic. Right. So I like that they kind of put the nail in that yes, there were more. I thought she was cool. I liked her relationship with Finn, the idea that they kind of bonded over that they probably trusted each other instinctually because they were defected stormtroopers and kind of have that, you know, lost past and lost childhood kind of thing. And I mean, as far as like the general guy, I never really care about
Hux.
Those guys.
Yeah.
Hux, the new guy.
Yeah.
The new guy who's also the old guy. Cause apparently he was around before. I don't remember him.
He's like something pain, right? Or no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like he's fine. He's just a guy who does the stuff that Palpatine tells him to do. Like, you know, Hux was,
He got Phasma'd in this. He
He's
got the
a different
treatment.
Character in every one
every
of these
movie.
Movies, and it's really annoying.
Like, I appreciated the idea of, I don't care that you're going to win. I just need this guy out of my face. Like, I appreciated
that.
That's
hilarious. He's, like, screwing over the whole entire, like, First Order fleet just because he hates one person.
But, like, that's the problem, though, because he knows it's a death sentence.
Yeah.
So, like, that is where I'm not sure how really logical that plays out. Cause I mean, he's the other guy sees straight through it and immediately kills him. Like it's no question.
Which that was a shock. I'm like, not gonna have a proper send off. He just gut blasted him.
He didn't need a proper send off. He wasn't that important of a character.
No. So, okay. I do want to talk about two things that happened in this movie that I'm going to call bait and switches that, I think were completely lame and cheap. And that was Chewie and C-3PO.
Yep.
You didn't like them?
I thought they were both handled incredibly poorly, and I'm going to explain. Here's why. So let's start with Chewie.
I know exactly what you're going to say, because I've done 150 episodes with you, and I agree with you on this.
So let's start with Chewie. So Finn sees Chewie handcuffed and loaded onto a transport.
Right.
Finn immediately shouts, "Rey, they've got Chewie," and points at the transport. And somehow there's another transport that nobody has seen, and the person pointing at the transport and the person looking at the pointing confused for another transport. They kill Chewie, but they don't. It's immediately figured out. It's figured out so quickly, and it's never brought up again, that there's no actual emotional weight to it other than me being pissed that they killed Chewie off screen and then didn't do it.
I agree. No, I was like, that's how they did Chewie. Like, you know, like when it blew up in my head, I'm like, that's what they fucking did to Chewie. I'm not happy with this. And I think I was less happy when I found out that he was still alive because of whatever
stupidity,
you just described.
I guess.
Yeah. Like, so, you know, I don't want Chewie to die, but there was nothing, every impactful, like, most of the, there was maybe one at the very end that we haven't talked about, but there was like no impactful deaths of the characters that we've known through the 9 movies that they said were deaths, essentially, right?
Well, that's where it falls apart for me. You can kill off beloved characters as long as you do it well. And in this case, they're in a desert and somehow they missed a ship. Finn missed a guy who knows these protocols and procedures missed this somehow. And yeah. Rey, who had a completely different angle, also missed the same thing. Like, so that did, and it's resolved so quickly that her believing that she killed him has no impact on the story. It doesn't change anything. It doesn't alter her path at all because it's undone so fast. And then
it's the same thing with C-3PO.
It's the exact same thing with C-3PO, except it's worse with C-3PO because they had to invent a convoluted technical limitation to tell that part of the story. Is there anything in canon prior to this movie that says a droid like him can't decipher and say Sith?
If no. Protocols are put in place, then
well,
yes.
I mean, sure, there's but, things in canon that, but that's, like, protocols exist in canon. But,
right,
like, it's
but
never,
like, that's such
not
a vague
example
thing.
Of that.
In this case, they had to specifically create the fact that he's not allowed to do it, and the only way to get him to do it is to wipe his memory. Is like, it's such a convoluted thing that it's sad, and it's... You see his sacrifice, and you're like, man, this guy who's been like the fraidy cat for 40 years is now going to be the hero, you know, and sacrifice himself. And the whole thing's undone anyway.
Yeah. And R2-D2 restores his memory. And
yeah, it's all undone, and he's totally fine, and everything's back to normal. Like, so like that, that loses all of its weight too. And it was completely like, I hate saying contrived when it comes to fictional stuff, because it's all designed, right? But that just felt so over-designed. And you take it away.
See, I like 3PO in this movie.
I like 3PO
nobody's,
in this
nobody's
movie.
Saying that, yeah,
oh,
you're
saying,
like,
okay, I see what you mean.
I don't,
the plot that happened around him.
Right. And that's where my problem is.
I can get past it.
I love these characters. I love these actors. John Williams' score is amazing. The movie looks phenomenal. The writing is just sloppy and cheesy and all over the place.
See, that's why I can't really let stuff like that go, because I love the characters so much that when in their character they decide to make a sacrifice, which is what C-3PO did, which is way out of the normal character form, but he finally wants to be the hero, and that sacrifice means nothing because it's completely undone in 2 minutes. That's where I have the problem. Like, I like C-3PO. Like I said, I loved his character, and even in this movie his character was great, but the fact that he made that sacrifice and then it got flipped so quickly to make that sacrifice basically meaningless, that's my problem.
Okay. It's almost like they wrote it just so he could have the line, "I'm looking at you for one last time," because we're doing that as an audience, right? And like that, I don't like that.
So you're
that.
Saying if since he did sacrifice, you would rather have him just
be
stay
gone. Either gone or like memory wiped. Okay. I would have even been fine if it was just his memory wipe and then he was starting to meet people again, and that's fine.
Like he did before.
Right. Gotcha. If they hadn't had the R2 restore it.
Because he knew, because that was the sacrifice he made, was to forget.
Right.
And that it's not death, but it is a big sacrifice.
Yeah. For a droid, that's basically death.
You know, and so I think that that's important. And the Chewie thing is almost done to set up the part of the movie that is like people talk about how The Force Awakens is basically like a play for play of A New Hope, but there's a good chunk of The Rise of Skywalker that's literally A New Hope, and that's everything that happens on that big super mega Star Destroyer when they go to save Chewie, right? Rey goes off on her own just like Obi-Wan does, right? And they and then Poe and Finn have to go rescue a prisoner just like Luke and Han do, and then Rey and Kylo have the exact same standoff that Obi-Wan and Darth Vader do, even with the troops, the stormtroopers running around them, right? It's almost beat, like shot for, forget beat for beat, it's like shot for shot from A New Hope. And I'm like, don't, like, people criticized you for kind of doing that in The Force Awakens. Don't steer more into that.
So, do you think that was them doing, like, fan service for, like, hey, reminisce on this or not? Because this film has a lot of fan service.
Here's my problem. Because since it's Abrams, I don't know. Because he has a history of just redoing stuff.
He did, like, it with Star Trek. He's done it with a lot of his stuff.
He did it with The Force Awakens. He did it with Star Trek Into Darkness. And so it's hard to know when he's doing it, if it's supposed to be homage or it's just redoing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. If it was a different director.
I took this fan service. I honestly didn't have as much of a problem with that. I kind of liked that they were going through the same thing. Okay. But it is, I could see how it would bother some people. And you're not wrong in your opinion. I just, it didn't bother me nearly as much.
I don't want to say that it bothered me. I just thought it was kind of silly. It just kind of took me out of it because I'm like, I know I've seen this before, you know?
I can understand that. It didn't take me out personally, but...
That's fair.
So speaking of fan service, they did bring back a fan favorite character as well, which is Lando.
Yes.
So what do you guys think of Lando's contribution to this?
I thought he was good right up until the creepy-ass scene at the very end.
With him and Janna?
Yes. What was that? Is he implying that he's... her dad? Is he hitting on her?
No.
It seemed more like he was hitting on her to me, honestly.
I really didn't take it that way at all. Either.
I was not the only one because there's a whole thread on Reddit about it today.
Wow. Oh. No, I just took it as him being just helpful because he's like the last general left now.
Yeah.
Everybody else
and
is
so
dead.
He goes up to this one random black girl.
No, she comes up
girl.
To him.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's sitting there. She comes up to him and starts the conversation.
She's like, hey, where are you from? And he says some system.
An old
here.
System.
It just seemed a little weird to me.
And he goes, what about you? And she's like,
but other
know.
Than that, I thought he was good. I mean,
it
was cool seeing him like in a less like, you know, jokey and it's right. more like he's actually
more
a general.
Somber.
And, yeah.
I was very happy to see how good he looked and sounded because the promotional artwork made him look not as good, like not as healthy. And so I liked seeing that he's doing okay.
I follow him on Twitter and he like posts like a bunch of his like workout videos and it's very fun to watch.
Oh, I should check that out.
It's very fun.
Cause like, I'm a huge Billy Dee Williams fan. I love him. And so like when I started seeing the promotional stuff, I'm like, man, he's not looking too good. And then in this, he sounds great. And I was like, oh, okay.
He sounds great. He's doing his stuff. And so did you care that he basically had the same outfit that he did in Solo or no?
No.
Okay.
No, I just, like, I mean, it's no weirder than when he wore Han's clothes.
It's no weirder than, like, literally, I forgot about that. It's no weirder than literally everyone in the movie never changing their clothes the entire time.
Yeah,
and Rey's outfit managing to stay white the entire movie despite walking
through the desert.
She's
basically worn the same thing in all three films.
This one was a little different, but yeah, it definitely is similar.
So another fan service thing is they brought back three characters that people love, which is Wedge.
Yes, the one little scene.
That was cool.
Yeah,
that was
very
nice to see. So they brought back Wedge. They brought back Wicket the Ewok.
Mm-hmm. Which was, I thought that was, I didn't love
seeing
the Ewoks
again. They retconned the Death Star, like, crashed on the planet and radiated it so there's no one there to live anymore.
Yeah.
Well, so I want to point out something about the Ewoks. There were no CGI eyelids.
There were not. They're just like blankly just
and I'm
staring
very,
into your soul.
I'm very happy about that.
If there had to be Ewoks, then yes, I would prefer them with no CGI eyelids. But why did there have to be Ewoks?
Because they were on Endor.
Yeah.
That's it, fine. Like,
so that's the
lots
forest
things
moon
happen
of
Endor,
technically. Remember we've
yeah.
Right. Right. That, yes. The forest moon of Endor.
Chris and I had this huge discussion where we're like, is it Endor or the forest moon? Like we had a 10-minute discussion on this.
Wow, I'm glad I didn't listen to that one.
It was very fun. And obviously the other fan service would be Han.
Right. And so did you guys see it together or separately?
Together. We saw it together.
Okay. So did your theater go when Han was there? Because it was a total surprise for me.
It got very quiet.
Okay.
Well, and also that was just right after Leia died too, so everyone was just kind of like,
I gotta be honest, that's one of the best kept secrets in a modern film that I can think of, that they were able to pull that
did
off.
Did you
without
expect
any...
him to come back at
no
all?
Okay.
Also, of all the fan service moments in the movie, that one was by far the best one.
Yeah.
The I know line, like, that got me emotional. Like, none of the other fans, even Leia dying didn't get me emotional. Well, until Chewie broke down. That killed me. But
that was kind of how I was.
No,
too.
But Han's scene, that was the most emotional part of this trilogy.
Yeah.
For me.
Absolutely. It's definitely,
and there's some personal reasons for that. But,
well, and it looked like at one point, like, they were saying the exact same dialogue that they say before he kills him. I'm like, if we have to watch Han die one more goddamn time,
that's not going to happen.
You know what?
I was going to flip shit.
You're actually right, Ryan. That is the most emotional scene in Star Wars for me.
I don't think just for you. Like, just, I mean, you have two just amazing actors.
Yeah.
I mean, I was really disappointed that we didn't get more Ben Solo in this, because Adam Driver is really great, and he hasn't gotten to do shit in all these movies other than act like an upset baby. And so everything with Ben was gold for me, and getting to see him opposite of Harrison Ford in that, it was just a wonderful, I mean, the cinematography was gorgeous. I loved that whole, like, Death Star with the water and all that stuff. And so in that particular scene, it was just phenomenal.
It was a good, you know, as soon as, you know, heard, you know, hey, kid, it was like, oh.
Yes.
Because I was thinking, like, they're not going to do a Force ghost. He can't be a Force ghost. Like, that's not, no. But he
no,
was
and I
like
that they left it ambiguous. You don't really know what
it was. It was not an unlocked memory, but, you know, a Ben Solo thought, not a Kylo Ren thought.
Right. It was very, very cool. I like that scene a lot.
Yes.
Did you like the whole, I love the set designs for this film, by the way.
Like, for the most part.
The sets were amazing. The ruined throne room and the old Death Star was beautiful.
I literally got like chills. A three-quarter chub in that scene.
I got chills on my
And I also had then. Chills, but also a three-quarter chub because I was like, I saw the windows first, and then I was like,
"Yep,
oh shit, like this looks so familiar." Yep. And then I saw the throne, and I was like, "My God, this is awesome!" The stuff that happened here, I loved it.
That was great. I liked his like secret, I don't know, off room where you see Dark Rey for a moment. That was kind of cool. I love the fact that they built a life size blockade runner, because you only see that ship for, like, you know, 30 seconds, and that's really in the, you know, episode 4, and that's it. But they built a life-size blockade runner, and that's one of my favorite ships in Star Wars. So seeing that was really cool and very, very, like, oh, I like that.
Yeah, the ships in the big fleet, it was really cool seeing so many different ones, because something that Star Wars does really well that Star Trek doesn't do as much is, like, variety,
design, yeah.
Right? Star Trek has classes, and there's 30 of the same of each class.
Which, there's
something
to be said for that, too.
Sure, it's a little more naval,
yes.
Right? Like the Empire is, right? They have this design for this thing, right?
Star Trek 1, 2, and 3, yeah.
But there's something very real and, like, lived in about the Resistance and the Rebels and just the regular...
Yeah, you're looking at, like, people's homes, essentially. Right. Yeah. So, like, every house is different, you know? There's going to be some that are the same, but they're all different designs. I would have... That scene where they started showing all the ships would have been amazing if they hadn't ruined it in the fucking trailer. Like, seriously, that had just happened on screen and I had never seen that in the trailer, that would have blown my mind. But because you could already pick out all the ships because you could freeze frame the trailer and see it all.
Well, here's what they needed to do. They needed... If you're going to show it like that in the trailer, then the movie version has to be a much longer, slower, like, epic shot.
So you can
with
see
swelling
more of the
music and stuff where you're panning across some of the ships.
Also,
like,
just the problem with
that
scene,
would have slowed it down a little bit.
How the fuck did Lando go and get, like, all those ships in, like, an hour? That was another huge leap in logic that is really hard. Like, I get Lando has connections, but you're talking what looked like hundreds of ships.
I don't know.
I assumed a mass transmission was sent, but that's
right.
Just
but
me.
They're all just going to show up. Like, I mean, I don't know. It was very weird.
I guess I felt the way The Last Jedi ended on that such like a downer, alone note. I'm like, well, they're obviously going to have to undo that for there to be any battle.
Right, but maybe if like Lando had been out doing that the whole movie, it would have been better. Like 16 hours to. I don't think I could get 10 friends to hang out in an hour, honestly.
Just because you don't have 10 friends?
Well, maybe not.
What if the Nazis were back? Oh, wait.
We're not going to get into that, Derek.
Speaking of the last battle, what did you guys think of it? Because I thought it was entirely too short, but that's just me.
Are you talking about just the ship battle, or are you talking about everything with,
the
like...
The ship battle and then, like, boarding the ship and blowing up the antenna and whatever.
The antenna thing was a little funky for me, just because, like... all right, so they're going to be on the ground. I had pictured in my head more than one that they were going to have to take out. So when it was just one, I was done. And then they switch it to the ship. I'm like, well, then why don't they all just have that on their ship or something?
Yeah.
And then like they just threw a bunch of grenades down a...
Thermal detonators, Derek.
I'm sorry. Thermal detonators, right, down the hatch, and like it blows up down the row a little bit and like up the things. So, like, I don't know. That didn't really work for me, but it, the battle was fine. It's a lot of stuff happening all at once.
Yeah. I didn't know where Janna came from, because like they didn't show her like leaving Endor and her people. Like, there she's like shows up like on the transport.
I assume they just went on the Falcon.
Giddy up.
I just figured they were on the Falcon.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a general assumption, but I said the same thing.
Because she helped them repair the Falcon, so I just figured they just left with them.
That's fair.
Yeah.
So what did you guys think of...
You have a lot of notes.
I do have
I keep
lot
telling
of...
you to look at... Well,
so some of that is from Chris, because she didn't be here with us. So
she wants to talk about what you guys thought of Leia's sacrifice and her death on screen. Did you think she was going to die in this movie?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I don't think there's any question. Well, at least for me personally, but yeah, like I said, it didn't really impact me as much as I thought it would in this movie until Chewie. That got to me, but I don't know why it didn't really have much weight. The way she just like went and laid down and died, it was, you know, even Yoda had more weight than that when he died.
I think the difference, at least for me, is that I knew they were going to have to do something like that. And so mentally, I've been prepared for that for a while, a long time now.
I actually had a hope that they weren't going to kill her.
I figured you kind of had to, because otherwise she has to die off screen. And I don't think that that's fair.
They want to be in control of the character, and they can, and by killing her in this movie, then they are in control of that. Otherwise,
it's done.
It's just left up to
a video game, a comic book, exactly, a novel, a tie-in, right? And that's not.
And who every video game would be the one that you know kills Leia,
And I don't think that's appropriate. No. Like you know, Luke's gone, Han's gone. You know, Chewie's not, but his species lives a very long time.
Correct.
You know, so having her end that way, when you have the footage to do it versus later when you don't, you know, I felt like it had to happen. And so I was just prepared for it.
When it happened on screen, I just went silent because I love Carrie Fisher and I love
Leia.
But
you didn't cry. Like,
no, I did.
Oh, okay.
Did you?
Well, you just said you went silent. So
I went silent, and then just like tears just went going down my face. And I was looking at my like peripheral vision. I just see Rey look at me, and she just grabs my arm, and it was very sweet.
I saw that.
Yeah, it was very sweet. And then when Chewie lost it, I cried even more.
That was sad.
That was. Because, you know, that's who he has left. And that was, oof. But, you know, I could talk about Leia forever, but...
Yeah, and she wasn't a huge part of this movie, so we probably shouldn't.
She wasn't, which I know, obviously, you know, with, you know, the footage they had. But she was still the heart of the story, and that's... They still had, you know, what they were going to do with 9. She was going to be the one to redeem.
Well, she was originally supposed to show up at the end with a lightsaber alongside several other characters.
Correct.
And help Rey. So, yeah, there's a lot more.
I'm still glad that she got to redeem Ben in a different way, but I'm still glad that it was her who did it and not, you know, someone else. I'm glad it was very much her.
That's fair.
I will say seeing her lightsaber was really cool. You got a really cool shot of, like... For a prop guy who wants to build stuff like this.
If Buster cool Props wants to 3D print me one, I will gladly pay for it.
I really like the design a lot. For some reason.
It reminds me a lot of Luke's green saber.
Yeah, the Return of the Jedi one. Yeah.
I like, it's, what is it, silver and copper, basically, hers? Yeah.
It just seemed right. Like, whoever designed that did a very good job kind of encompassing the character in it.
Yeah,
I liked it.
I agree. It kind of reminded me of also Mara Jade's hilt from the EU. It just looked like it. Now,
well,
it's not obviously hers.
All kinds of different in every different piece of art you ever saw.
But it just kind of reminded me of it, hers and stuff. But no, I liked that
hers
Leia had
purple,
a lightsaber.
Though.
I know. I wish Leia's was purple. I do wish that.
I just why they all have to be blue? I love green sabers, and there was like no green sabers in this entire movie except for like the one scene
with
flashback.
Luke,
with Luke, and everybody else's is blue. So whatever. I
mean, it has to do
fine.
With the crystal that's chosen, right?
Sure,
so
but like
maybe there's just maybe...
it's also supposed to signify the type of like Jedi you are, like the sorcerers type. You know, the ones that more force users will have a certain type of color, or a certain color, whereas the Jedi Knights will have a different color and things like that.
Well, you know why it wasn't going to be purple, right?
Well, yeah, because
Samuel L. Jackson's agreement was that Sam's like, the only one.
Yeah, like so.
And then Chris had two more things. She wanted to talk about the score and and the voices of the Jedi helping Rey.
All right, so let's talk about the score real quick. I'm a big music guy. I miss playing instruments quite a bit. The score is lovely. I mean, it's John Williams, and the fact that he was able to do this and finish the saga, I think, is great.
And this this is the last Star Wars film he's ever going to do. Probably.
Yeah, correct. No, he already said it. This is it. Yeah. He's done with it, and I appreciate that he was able to complete it. I thought it was very, very good. It did seem to touch most of the franchise. I was expecting maybe some Duel of the Fates to show up at some point
because it was in the TV spot.
John Williams had said that this score spans the entire saga.
Yes,
and arguably the best thing to come out of the Phantom Menace is either Darth Maul or the Duel of Fates, and so I kind of expected that to be in somewhere. I'm not sure where it would have gone.
I don't think I heard it at all,
but I don't think it was in there. But otherwise,
they did have Yoda's theme when Luke raised the X-wing, and I was like, "Oh yes, I love me some Yoda." So
that was we need to talk about that scene before we're done. But that was very, very cool. I love the score.
I do too. I think it's the best score out of all three.
Yes.
That's just me personally who thinks that. My question to you, since you're a big music guy, when they do more Star Wars movies, because they said they are going to do them, who would you like to see take over scoring duties? Because I love the guy who did Rogue One.
Okay, so, well, so
Michael, I can't say his last name. You can, though, can't you? Or
Giacchino.
There we go.
So he's great. He does Marvel. He does Pixar.
He sounds a lot like Williams.
He is everywhere. However, the guy who's doing Mandalorian, and of course I'm drawing a blank on his name at this very moment.
Ludwig? No.
It's like Grossman or something like that. I apologize.
He's the one
I'm drawing
who did
a blank,
the Black Panther soundtrack.
With every passing episode of The Mandalorian, I like the score more. And he's actually doing the new Nolan film, Tenet. He's doing the score for
that. Hans Zimmer's not doing that?
No.
Oh.
And so I would like to see him have a go at a Star Wars film before you bring back Michael. Michael can clearly do it.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. But he's doing so much right now. Having other voices in cinema, I think, is important.
Okay. That's fair. I can see either one doing that. That's very fair. And then finally, so the Jedi voices. One, can you name all of them?
Well, you had the list.
Yes, because I sent them a list earlier.
Oh, okay.
Rey actually picked out almost all of them.
Picked out all but like two or three, because I can obviously hear the males speak more clearly when the females are talking.
I knew you popped a wood as soon as Ahsoka's voice came up.
Well, I heard Ahsoka's, but like also you hear Ayla's voice and Luminara and Adi Gallia, and they were muffled so much or like just one on top of the other, you really couldn't distinguish who was talking, and that kind of...
Yeah,
sucked.
A lot of it was even the characters I know were really tough. I don't know.
Like, even Anakin was hard to hear.
Obviously,
at some
people
points.
Could do it because Rachel was able to make most of them. But for me, listening to it, I got like two.
Obviously, Yoda, Qui-Gon.
And I don't know all the animated characters like you do, so I don't. I wasn't able to pick them out. But
like I know I heard Samuel, right? But
what did he say? I couldn't hear him.
I don't remember what he said. I just remember his voice was there.
I remember Yoda.
Yeah,
that's
distinguishable. His is pretty.
That was the easiest one to pick out.
And then Obi-Wan, you could hear Alec Guinness and Ewan McGregor.
Yeah,
and then obviously Liam.
It was a cool. So we could talk about that scene a little bit too. It was a really cool moment. It didn't play out the way I expected it to, because like they're talking her up as like the pinnacle Jedi, and so I didn't expect her to just use her sabers to absorb the electricity.
Yeah, doesn't really show any skill.
I thought she was gonna do something kind of a la Yoda versus Palpatine, right, or whatever, where like he catches the lightning
and
stuff like that.
It back
you
or
know,
something, yeah,
like something like that. Like if you want to do something new with the Force, that's the time to do it because you've now told us this is something new, right? But it wasn't bad either. It just didn't quite hit the level that the speech was telling me it was supposed to.
I liked seeing his new like Imperial guards. They were kind of cool. The red throne room.
Yeah, they were fine. They looked like the ones.
I always liked the red guards in general. They were always really cool to me. But
regarding that last scene that we were just talking about, I expected all of them to show up as like Force ghosts. to back her? Because I wanted Leia to show up with a saber and Luke to show up with a saber. It's funny
that you say that, because this was not the original ending that was shot. This was reshot. The original ending was supposed to have all the Force ghosts come and, like, kind of do, like, you know, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire and, you know, attack the Emperor. And it didn't test well with audiences at all, so they had to reshoot it.
Yeah, I would have preferred that, probably. It's easy to say that thinking about it, but if they didn't do it right, it could have been bad, too. Also, this implies that Ahsoka is dead, which is interesting. I don't know what the Grogu lifespans are, but that's only, like, 70 years old. So,
well, she's...
Yeah, because she's only, like, a teenager in the Clone Wars.
She's a teenager in the Clone Wars, and then in Rebels, you see her alive after the Battle of Endor. So she's probably in her 40s, 50s, so... Add 70 or 80.
So yeah. I was right on the money. But yeah, it's you know, it's just interesting. Like I said, I don't know what Togruta lifespans are. I guess I just assumed that they were somewhere near human. So
no one really does. So yeah,
it's odd that she would be dead at this point. But
they also now. They also confirmed that Mace Windu's dead. Sorry, Samuel. As far as the Force ghosts are concerned, I think that maybe that could have been done well. I also think that it plays into the end where you have Luke and Leia show up, but Ben's not there.
Yeah, and Anakin's not there.
I thought it was going to mirror Return of the Jedi, right? So I thought we were basically going to see Luke, Leia, and Ben, right? Were kind of her connections to the Force,
yeah.
Right? And he didn't show up, and I don't know why he didn't show up.
Well, and they're like, none for you. No Force ghosts for you.
Yeah, I don't know.
That is actually kind of a good point. I didn't even think about that until you said something.
I kept waiting for it, like when they the two of them, and I'm like, and go. It didn't happen.
Go.
I was just expecting it.
So we haven't talked at all about the Luke scene.
Correct.
Where he has actual weight as a Force ghost and can catch things. It was kind of interesting that when she threw the saber away, that he caught it and brought it back to her, which was, I don't know if that was a slap in the face to
Johnson, definitely Abrams' giant middle finger.
Yeah, that's what I kind of took it as.
Maybe that's showing, you know, Luke, you know, growing. I'm like, he's a ghost; he can't really grow.
But what I thought that whole thing, because he has apparently some sort of physical capabilities as a ghost. I thought that whole thing was going to be a setup for the last scene where those kids can all go and harm Palpatine.
Right.
And based on what Ian was saying, I guess that was the case.
Right, but then. I don't know. It was just a weird thing that they established only to not have that pay off at all.
I really think it was just to be like, Luke would not have actually done that.
Yeah.
Right? Because Mark Hamill didn't like it. J.J. Abrams didn't like it. The
fans didn't like it.
The fans didn't like it. Johnson was the only guy who thought that that was funny.
Yeah,
and it wasn't so funny. That was just their way. It was a retcon is what that was.
Yeah, just like the entire first 20 minutes of the movie.
Well, there's other things in the movie, but yes. But it's a cool scene. That felt more like Luke than The Last Jedi did. And I'm not saying that he couldn't be the way he was in The Last Jedi. I just, this felt better, right? And sometimes it's okay to just have a movie feel better. It doesn't always, like a movie doesn't have to make you uncomfortable, right? These are not real life intense dramas or anything like that. These are sci-fi fantasy operas.
Yes.
Right.
I did like seeing him raise the X-Wing though. That was very I like that.
Finally
like
he could do it.
Right? Yes. Like that's totally what that is. Plus,
I think X-Wings are my favorite ship in the entire.
When you see like, you know, that's the classic X-Wing. It's not the new Resistance X-Wing.
The classic X-Wing. It's just such a beautiful ship design and it timeless. Is. So yeah, I always like seeing the classic X-Wing. But even the newer X-Wings are cool.
Yes.
Poe's X-Wing that he had in Force Awakens was cool. But
in the Dark Horse Star Wars comic, there was a black squadron of black X-Wings. Mm-hmm. And those, man, I want to see a real one of those.
They're very cool.
But yeah, the X-Wing has always been my favorite Star Wars.
You really see a bunch of classic ships too in this. You see the B wings come back. You see the Y wings. You see A wings.
Y wings are always one of my favorites too.
You see Y-wings a bunch of like, you know, when they kind of pan the ships. You see the Ghost from Rebels. You see a few Mon Calamari capital ships. You see it may not be the same ship, but you see a ship of the same model as the Razor Crest.
I'm looking forward
Mandalorian.
I'm looking forward to seeing when that comes out on, you know, 4K. All people picking out, because I'm sure there's. There's probably an Enterprise somewhere way in the back, just as J.J. Abrams going, you know.
Well, because Star Trek has done that. In Star Trek First Contact, the Falcon shows up really, really, really quickly in the Borg battle.
Put R2-D2 in the first Star Trek.
The 2009. Yeah.
And, like, the debris or something.
So there's that back and forth.
Yeah. You know? So I wouldn't be surprised if some Star Trek ship showed up in the background.
I just want a high-res, like, cover photo for my Twitter and Facebook of just all those ships. You know? Because I'm a ship guy. It's part of why I love science fiction. Mm-hmm. I love ships. They're characters to me, right? Yeah. The Falcon is a character to some extent. It wasn't used as well in this one as I might have liked, but
it was fine. Like, nothing really stood out to me as bad. It just didn't stand out as good either.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So finally, what do you guys think of how it ended with Rey on Tatooine? Do you think it brought it full circle?
I think that's what they're trying to do.
I mean, that's definitely what the goal was. I'm just not sure about the why. Because
why did those sabers need to be buried on Tatooine?
Well, and on Tatooine, like, right there. Because, I mean, Luke didn't really belong there, and Leia was never there. And so I'm not really sure, other than, like, to hide them, but couldn't you just destroy them or throw them into a sun? Like, I don't really know.
She wouldn't destroy them.
Or lock them up somewhere where, like, you have control of it.
Like, what's the goal?
Yeah.
Right?
I think she was putting that legacy to rest, maybe? Putting it to peace?
I don't know.
It was really cool seeing her there. Like, beyond all this, like, seeing Luke, you know, where it all started, the moisture farm, it was all really cool. And it, you know, a lot of this film, the reason why I enjoyed what I enjoyed was because of the nostalgia and seeing these places again, you know, all these years later. But yeah, that scene was a little weird. And then the random person walking up and going, "Who are you?" Like,
well, because that was to solidify what I think is a very interesting message for the movie that I don't want to be overshadowed here. And the message of this movie, the actual baseline message, is that you can choose your family.
Yeah.
And that's a very interesting social message for Star Wars to pump out in the last film.
You can choose your destiny too. You can choose, you know, your destiny is not written in stone.
Well, that's always, like, the choosing your destiny thing has been there since the beginning. Because that's what Return of the Jedi is Anakin coming back, right? But the idea that you can choose your family, that she's choosing Finn and Poe, she's choosing Luke and Leia, she's not choosing Palpatine, right? You can choose who your family is. That is a very important message, especially in today's age, where a lot of people are starting to really believe that maybe just because you're blood related to somebody doesn't necessarily mean you owe that person more than somebody who does truly treat you like family.
As someone who's, you know, a part of the LGBTQ community, that hits home like no other, because, you know, we always talk about, you know, in the community of our chosen families. And that's what Rey did. She had a chosen family.
Exactly.
That's what it was.
So I thought that was an interesting message. It's a good message. Sure.
I thought
it was
just a really clumsy way of getting there. Like, somebody just randomly walks along this moisture farm that's obviously way out in the middle of nowhere with some weird creature.
Am I a horrible person to, like, when I was, like, just thinking in my head when she was burying the sabers, like, they're gonna see, like, Uncle Owen's skull just, like, somewhere, like, in the hole.
Oh, jeez, that's messed up. That's dark.
Is that really bad?
That's dark.
I'm like, the set decorator could have had a blast with that.
The problem is they needed her to say her name, right?
Yes. Right, but I just feel like Disney, with all the money that they have, probably could have found a better way to do that.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
I'm not mad at how they handled it. I thought it was a nice little send-off.
It's cheesy. But then again, like, there's a lot of cheesiness in here. And some of it's good. Like, Poe and Finn are just a joy together, and
like a married couple.
That was a good cheesy. So, okay, I do want to talk about that for a minute. I love those guys so much, and I love the three of them together. They're great.
They have good chemistry together.
I'm a little bummed they didn't go that direction.
So are they. They are very mad too.
And I know that Zori's in it, but Poe could be bi, right? Like, it doesn't have to be, you know, all one direction.
Oh, yeah, no,
but
Oscar Isaac, he really wanted them to be boyfriends, and that he said, and even John Boyega was like, we were kind of setting that up in maybe Force Awakens, but then Last Jedi, they said no, so.
It kind of disappointed me, because there is Star Wars' first same-sex kiss, but it's between a character with no name who had one line and a character with no lines, and it's not in the foreground, it's in the midground.
She was in The Last Jedi.
I don't remember her at all.
She was the one who was, like, Leia's second in command.
I thought that was Holdo.
Or she was the one who introduced everyone to Holdo, and then she was on the ships and everything. She was
still like, a very pretty minor character. When you have these two guys who are your leads, whose actors want to do it, whose chemistry clearly says that it's believable, and if you're gonna put it in the movie, like, that's the natural place to put it. Because no one's in a relationship, right? Finn didn't go with Rose. Poe's not with Zori. Neither of them are with Rey. So, like, you can do it. You're not going to hinder any other plot threads by doing it. So, I don't know. I felt like that was a little bit of playing it safe on Disney's part.
I agree.
Which was, you know.
Speaking of kisses.
Well, before we get to that. I'd like to say something about that. Beyond that dynamic. Did I just completely miss whatever Finn's secret was that he was supposed to tell Rey?
He never did.
They said that there was no plot threads left at the end of this movie. That's a pretty big one.
I assumed it was him saying, like, hey, I think I'm force sensitive.
I assumed it was, hey, I've got a crush on you, or I'm in love with you. Something like that.
I when they're sinking in the sand, that's exactly what I thought it was. And then the more he used the force, the more I thought maybe not. But it's definitely one of those two things.
At the end, I was thinking maybe he knew that Palpatine was her father, because he said that Leia knew, didn't he, at one point? And I'm wondering if that was it.
Kylo said Leia knew.
Okay.
I don't think Finn knew.
Okay. No, that was going to be a bit of a stretch that he would know.
Kylo said that Leia knew, and
that's where I was confused,
Luke knew.
So, and it didn't. And that was the point, was that it didn't matter.
Right.
That they still were going to raise her as their
Leia
own.
Chose her.
Now we can go to your thing, Ian.
Okay.
I just wanted
the
to
the incestuous kiss.
Was it incestuous? We're not going to get into that again. But
the possible incestuous
kiss. So here's the real problem with the scene. It is not supposed to be funny, but when he dies, it made me chuckle. I belly chuckled out loud, reflexively.
Was that you?
Yes.
I thought it was Zach.
It was me. And I apologize, because it's not supposed to be funny.
So, like, when he, like, disappears, you mean?
No. When he, like, falls back.
Oh, okay.
Because the way it was shot is, you know, he's bringing her back to life. And it's super cool to see a guy who was on the dark side do what is implied to be the light side ability.
Correct.
Right? It's like the opposite of the electricity, essentially, right? Mm-hmm. And you're seeing him do this, and it's his big redemption, and, you know, there's that big moment, and they have the kiss, and Rey's really excited about the kiss, and I'm glad that they're going to be happy. And then he dies, and it's very Romeo and Juliet, which is still, like, Romeo and Juliet is still kind of a lame concept, and they were, like, 14-year-olds in Romeo and Juliet. So, like, in this one, to have that big moment and everything's good, and then he just falls over.
Did you expect him not to die then?
I expected him not to die.
Because how I saw it was that he transferred the rest of his energy to her.
And that's why I'm not saying it doesn't make sense or it's not consistent with something in the movie. The way it was shot and or edited together, the beats landed in such a way that
it made you giggle.
Seemed like a joke.
It made you tee-hee.
And I laughed. And that sucks, because Ben is great in this movie, and Adam Driver is fantastic in this movie, and Daisy Ridley is phenomenal in this movie, and it's neither of their performances that caused that problem. It was a timing thing, and that bummed me out.
Ryan, your thoughts?
My thoughts are that I can't say that.
Are you a Raylo? Are you a Raylo shipper?
I was shocked at that, but my problem was not necessarily with the kiss. My problem was that Rey should have died and Ben should have lived. I think that would have been more impactful to the story, that Rey makes the sacrifice and that Ben, having been redeemed, now can move on, carry on the legend of Skywalker. The movie's called, and I get that there's the message, right? That's important. But I think that in terms of, like, the actual story and impact, that would have been made more sense for me if she had just stayed dead.
I like that idea, because then literally Ben Skywalker almost is rising from the ashes.
It is Skywalker. You know? He's literally a Skywalker.
Yeah. But I think that would have been very good.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
So I felt the kiss was very forced. Like, because, you know, they haven't had, like, any romantic chemistry really at all.
Did you not watch The Last Jedi?
Yeah, I don't agree with that at all.
She wasn't, like, in love with him.
I don't know. They were both sweaty, and he was shirtless, and she was staring at him.
God.
So I'm pretty sure that's sexual chemistry. I'm surprised they didn't like use their force powers to do it right there.
Everyone on the Enterprise in the original series, right? And Shatner's always shirtless.
Sure. But they all slept with him. So.
I just felt like it was very forced and very like not needed.
It's not needed. I can agree that it's not needed. I don't think it was forced because I do think that that's what they were playing into for the last two movies. Very much. Even in the first one, a little bit. I like your thought on that, though, Ryan. Especially since there isn't another one and this is it for this cast.
Right.
Then you don't have to worry about the next story. You have to worry about this story. And that's a rare thing to know that you only have to care about this story. And that probably would have been
a
more emotional, stronger end. To have him crying over her dead body, unable to save her, seeing her sacrifice.
And you would have had Han and Leia, you know, their sacrifices, you know,
mean so much more.
Yeah, well, I mean, it did mean something, but you know what I mean.
No,
but also, it was like the third red herring death in the movie, you know, because they killed Rey, but then Rey's back again, you know, so I don't know. I think it would have been all around better if they had done it that way. But
and Palpatine he's officially dead now, right?
No, well, we thought he was officially dead last time, so who knows?
That's the problem. Like, I don't know why he wasn't dead the first time.
Right, like, he can get killed by a bunch of Force lightning blowing up in his face, but him getting thrown down a shaft and the Death Star exploding wasn't enough to kill him. So, right.
So
I
like,
mean, it's a weird thing.
And, like, so my assumption is that he recreated himself the way he was able to create Anakin. But with that said, why would he recreate himself with such like a beat up body that needed help? So I don't know. I don't understand.
I think the implication to solve this problem was that he was on the life support machinery, right? Like clearly that was what was keeping him alive.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Not the force. And so when that's destroyed, that he's now actually dead.
But he doesn't need the machinery because he steals the life force from the two of them. He's off that machinery in the final bits of that. He's back. He's essentially back to form pre-Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, he's like episode 3 Palpatine.
Give or take. Right. And so, yeah, I need to know how he quote died the first time and came back to have any idea. If
I hope
really
they explored
dead.
In some kind of other comic book or video game. Well, it's kind of cool.
That's why I have that problem with the whole thing just showing up in the first crawl that he's back. They made a huge mistake not having J.J. Abrams or somebody like a Kevin Feige that said, okay, we're doing this. This and this in the three movies.
Well, let's be
don't
fair.
Don't deviate from these three. I know what happened.
Okay. Well, so, but that was the plan. J.J. Abrams decided to walk away from that plan.
You could have other filmmakers. I'm saying that if you had somebody that wasn't making the film, like Kevin Feige, that's in charge and says you have to hit these story beats, you can do some other stuff in there that you'd like to do, but this is what the plan is and we're sticking to this plan.
I understand.
That would have been better because this should have been two movies.
Probably. Yeah.
100%.
Or, yes. It could have been a 3-hour movie. I don't know. I think the Palpatine thing is the problem. And again, that's really the fourth like death that's not a death that happens in this movie, really, right? And it's like that's a problem for me, and it's a problem with kind of Disney stuff recently is that nobody ever dies, and the more that happens, the less I'm gonna feel invested in those characters.
Yeah, because even right now we're talking about did Palpatine live? Did Palpatine die? We don't know. You know, until the next whatever Star Wars project is comes out, and they're like, let's put Palpatine in here.
So the next movie they have said will be in 2022, I believe. So they're taking a little bit of a break. Obviously, we have the Mandalorian, we have the Obi-Wan series, the Cassian series,
Clone Wars is back.
All that's coming back on Disney Plus, and we're getting some great TV streaming stuff. Movie-wise, where do you guys want to see it go into? I know you really want to.
You know what I'm going to answer.
I know what you really want to see. Which is the Old Republic.
Yeah, something in the Old Republic.
Which the more that theory is explored, the more I do like that.
It's just everything is cool in the Old Republic. Like, all this technology that we've seen in the current Star Wars movies is awesome, right?
Yes.
And really neat. But how cool would it be to see a Jedi that was limited with his lightsaber used by a cable going to a battery pack on his belt, right? Like, that adds another level of skill that they had to have. Or armored Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
Jedi that, you know, needed armor because they were warriors.
Yep.
They weren't monks. I just think that everything could be much deeper lore-wise than what the current trilogies were. So, yes, that's my 100% final answer. Always going to be, until it comes out, the Old Republic.
Or do you want to see the franchise go after this?
Exactly that.
Old Republic? Okay.
Because here's the thing.
So you want to see him go back, not forward.
Well, I don't... I don't want anything during what we've seen anymore, because I don't want the Empire hanging over any of these.
So what's better than thousands of years before?
Yeah. Exactly. Because when you go forward, now you have to come up with a bigger, badder, bad guy than Palpatine. And that can get annoying.
Right.
This would free you from all of that junk. You know it's all going to happen, but it's so far away that it doesn't have to be connected to anything.
And they can plant seeds in those movies that can, you know, or something.
Because if you jump forward, if you don't jump forward 1,000 years or something like that, then there's always the wake of, what did the Empire do?
Right.
Right? What did the First Order do?
Yeah, we have to explain this.
You have to talk about those things. And you can't really have that many Jedi. And let's face it, one of the main reasons I like Star Wars is the Force and the Jedi.
That's one of the main reasons everybody likes Star Wars.
Yeah. So what do you, and if you're not bringing back Daisy Ridley, then you're not going to have like her training new Jedi and stuff.
I was going to say, would you want to see Daisy, John, and Oscar come back in like 30 years and reprise their roles? Like,
Not like that. Nope. Would I be upset if they wanted to do another movie with this cast? No, because I really like this cast. But
I'd rather have them just cameo in like one of the Disney Plus shows or something. Like even in The Mandalorian, they're all alive during that point, right? Or well, maybe not. But like something like that.
Young, they're kids, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, but I'd prefer to see what Ryan's talking about. I think that's the better choice. I think it's the more creative choice.
I agree.
But you know, if those are my two choices, however, I'd rather have them come back than nothing.
Yeah, and I would rather I wouldn't be upset if they did that.
Because I just love the cast.
I do kind of want this chapter to be closed. Yes. Though. Like that was the whole point of this movie. We're closing the saga. And so when you bring them back, it's not closed anymore. Right?
I agree. I agree with you. And I think that, you know, doing it the 30 years later thing happened to be convenient at the time, but there were also times where it felt kind of forced.
Yes.
And I don't want them to have to do that again. So
I mean, I'd also be okay with like doing a movie, you know, set, you know, even 50 years before, like, you know, episode one.
No, because that's just going to add in like, going to be like, well, how did they get to what happened in episode one from here?
There's just going to be a thousand little Easter eggs about references to things in the prequels.
You got to far away from these. And
as someone who grew up on the prequels, it would satisfy me.
Well, but like, look at The Mandalorian. Like, I'm not going to spoil anything for anybody who hasn't listened, but there's so many little references and Easter eggs and nods to the greater Star Wars universe just in The Mandalorian.
That's true.
Right. And you know, it's pretty separated from the saga, you know, not time-wise, of course, but
there's no mention of Skywalkers. There's no mention. The only thing
there's
that's
no
like
Jedi, really.
No, there's the Empire and BB Uter, and that's it.
And what?
BB Uter,
the child.
The child.
Oh, baby Yoda. I thought you were saying like a droid's name. I was like, who is that?
push up my glasses real quick, you guys. It's not Baby Yoda.
No.
Okay.
Yoda died 5 years before this.
To everybody out there who gets annoyed when people call it Baby Yoda, we all know that it's not literally Baby Yoda. But what else do you want us to call it in
the
normal
child.
Conversation?
That's what everybody says. The child or
baby
the kid.
Baby child. The asset.
The asset. The package.
Yep.
Everybody that I've argued about this with. As they've said, we'll just call it the kid. That's what they call it on the show. It's like, okay, but like a kid is anything that's a young person in Star Wars, so that doesn't really narrow it down.
Yeah, it's
an
normal conversation.
Youngling.
An unslaughtered youngling.
Are there any of those left?
Well,
I do find it funny that Anakin's saber is now forever living in sand.
It's coarse,
and it gets everywhere.
That's why they did it.
Yep.
Why they did it.
So real quick, one of Chris's last things you want to talk about was, where do you guys, from 1 to 9, where do you rank this?
I can't place it yet. I need to see it again.
I need to see this again. I need to see The Last Jedi again.
It's not my favorite, I can tell you that much. It's also not my least favorite.
As far as the 9, so if we're just doing the saga films.
Correct, yes.
It's definitely, I like it definitely better than the whole prequel trilogy.
Okay.
I would say better than 1 and 2 for sure. Maybe not 3. 3 I kind of liked, so.
I have a lot of problems with 3. But I don't really care for the prequels. But that's a separate conversation. So it's definitely better than the 3 prequels for me. And right now, I would put it above both The Last Jedi and Return of the Jedi. So it would be 3rd of the 9.
So let's just... Okay, let's break it down just these 3. The Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, it's Last the best Jedi. Of those 3.
Okay, so the best of the Disney saga.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that.
Okay.
So that's where I would put
Last Jedi is bottom for me, and you know, Force Awakens I enjoyed, but not, I don't think I enjoyed it as much as this.
See, it goes 9, 8, 7 for me.
Okay.
Ugh. 8 above 7?
So weird.
Yeah, it just, I don't know.
But you're a prequel fan, so like, I guess I can
think things get a lot harder when you have to bring like Rogue One into the conversation and Solo into the conversation, because I like Solo a lot more than most people seem to.
And we all enjoyed Rogue One as well.
I think Rogue One is very good.
It's very strong.
Oh, movie. It was very good. Which, speaking of which, we did a poll on our Twitter, on the Echo Station Twitter, which, by the way, follow us at Echo Station Cast. Ding!
Or Screen Heroes at Screen Heroes Pod.
No, follow us first.
Battling podcasts.
So we did. I'm going to find it in a second.
We're really prepared.
But that post-credit scene, though, guys, I'm kidding.
That's no, when it finished, I leaned over to my girlfriend and said, wait for the post-credit scene. And she started to, and I was like, I'm just kidding.
There's... We did just sit around because we were waiting for the theater to clear out. You know, we were just kind of watching the credits and stuff like that. But
so out of the four Disney-released ones, we're not including Rise of Skywalker because this poll came out before that. We have The Force Awakens that came in at 31%. Last Jedi came in at 10%. Solo came in at 0%, which kind of sucked because I did like Solo.
There must have been like 8 votes total.
But Rogue One, no, 30 votes. But Rogue One came in
at
59%.
Wow. Rogue One is very good. I think the thing with Rogue One is I think it just stands really well on its own outside
and
of Star Wars.
And it didn't like compromise the ending in order to, which is a big thing, because this one compromised the ending, in my opinion, to make it more friendly for everybody. But
well, yeah, I really expected him to do that for Rogue One. I mean, we reviewed Rogue One way back when, so you can take a look at that. I think it's episode 52 or 57.
About 100 episodes ago.
It was a long time ago, yeah.
So... I just liked it. I like this movie a lot.
I enjoyed it quite a bit. Yeah. Now on Screen Heroes we do letter grades usually, and I always start with Ryan. So Ryan,
I don't know why.
I was gonna ask you, out of like 10 Death Stars, what do you get this film?
We do letter grades on Screen Heroes,
but
we don't do Death Stars.
But Death Stars are better.
But what we do is movie reviews, man.
Yeah,
that's
there's two of us here and one of you, so we are going to beat you in this one. You can answer in Death Stars.
I'm using Death Stars.
We always start with Ryan simply because then it goes Ryan, Ray, and then me, because I'm usually the one asking, and so I just go last.
I don't know. It's tough for me. I like off the top of my head now, I'd probably say like a B minus or a B. So,
Ian?
9 Death Stars.
Okay, so an A. A or A minus.
Yeah.
And then so for me, I'm somewhere between a B and a B plus.
Okay.
Somewhere in that range. Again, I'd like to watch it a second time because it's just there's so much happening in
there's
that
a lot to take in.
On my gut tells me B plus, you know, but I feel like maybe this is the kind of movie that might not do as well from future viewings. So we'll
I'm
seeing
it tomorrow, so I'll let you know how it
is. Let us know if it decreases.
Also, thank you guys, because this is considered the Echo Station season finale.
Us too.
So this is our season finale, and then we're obviously going to wrap up The Mandalorian on our Mandafetso, and then wrapping up Padme's Closet, which are two separate miniseries. But as the main channel, this is our season finale.
Well, we're happy to bring you out on such a high note, having the two of us. With our wonderful opinions.
Oh, I couldn't book anyone else, so.
Neither could we.
It's also the season.
Trust me, I tried.
It's the season finale of Screen Heroes as well. This is our 185th episode.
I don't know how many episodes we have.
Which is pretty cool. I've been keeping track because we're getting closer to 200, and I've got some ideas for that one to make it kind of fun.
Have a party. You're not invited, but.
All right. Well, we are.
I'm not Chris is.
We are way over time, hitting the hour and a half mark here.
Yeah, we're about as long as the movie at this point.
Let's go ahead and wrap things up. Ian, why don't you close out the Echo Station portion, and then I'll close out Screen Heroes.
Cool. So you can find us at Echo Station Cast on Twitter. Drop us a line. We love interacting with you guys. Follow me on Twitter at IR Turner. You can follow Chris at The Dirt Witch. We love talking Star Wars with you guys and all that stuff. And then you can find our podcast wherever you get your local podcasts from.
Yeah, I'll do that spiel because it's the same for both of us.
I was
going
to say, I'm going to let you do it. So,
And Ryan and I are from Screen Heroes. You can find Ryan at Buster Props. Ray, who cannot be here with us tonight, is at Siren Ray. I am at The Star Trek Dude. You can find the show at Screen Heroes Pod. We are on the Heroes Podcast Network, heroespodcasts.com. You can subscribe to all of our shows on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict. You name it, it goes on and on. So happy holidays, happy new year. We'll catch you guys in 2020.
May the force be with you
always.
I know.